I'm closely familiar with the Israeli tech and business environment. I'm developing expertise in the American one. And let me help you to build this and create this and develop this. And I was very fortunate to step in into this position of really developing the Innovation Lab bottom up with a lot of support and trust and freedom from the senior administration at YU.
Hi, good morning, Maria, and good morning, Lena.
Good morning.
Maria, it's great to have you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys for inviting me.
Yeah, sure. We think that from our preliminary talk, you have a great story to tell our listeners and some great insights in the interview ahead. So maybe just start by introducing yourself.
I'm Maria Blecher. I'm a behavioral scientist. I'm focused on consumer insights and behavior, and I'm running the Yeshiva University's Innovation Lab, which is a startup hub, borderless, based in New York City, that helps Israeli and not necessarily Israeli startups to have a soft launch into the U.S. tech ecosystem.
So your preferences are on Israeli startups coming to the U.S. from the Israeli Academy or whenever?
So that's a great question. I would say that the focus is definitely on startups that are coming from Israel. The Innovation Lab was established to add another layer, to build another bridge between the state of Israel, the startup nation, and the New York business environment. And we work with startups from various backgrounds. We do have a couple of them who are coming from more academic environments, but we work with a variety of accelerators and incubators in Israel.
Cool. So we know where you are today. And I guess our listeners also wonder how you got there and what milestones you went along the way.
Well, that's a good question, and I will try not to start too far, but I completed my PhD in consumer behavior and marketing in the Ben-Gurion University back in 2013. And I have to say that I always played on the intersection between the academic world and the business world, meaning when I had my PhD, when I was in the process of working towards it and working on my research. I also had a job in the real world. I worked in a high-tech company back in the days. I was teaching, I was advising, I was doing consulting. So I always had that real world experience that then I brought into my research and into my classroom. So I always was on both ends of the story. And after completing my PhD, I faced the same choices most of us when we complete our PhD. Should I pursue a postdoc, which in marketing and business is less, it's not as obvious track as in the in biology, chemistry, or even engineering sciences. And so it was a family decision. I at that time I had two young kids and I had my husband. And we always thought of that it would be a great opportunity to experience living abroad, and we loved New York, and NYU was one of the universities that were on the top of my list. I always wanted to have that NYU experience, and that was the decision. The decision was to pursue a postdoc, a visiting scholar position at NYU, and that's how I landed in New York. Exactly 7 years ago. And so at NYU, I joined the Stern School of Business, and I worked with an amazing advisor on the research.
But wait, I have a question about your PhD. So you said you integrated real world experience during your PhD course, but that was in business and management, right? It's not it's not under life science or natural science.
Absolutely. It was I was part of a business school, and my expertise is consumer behavior and decision making. So my research was essentially studying the effect of pro-social behavior on financial risk taking. I call this, you know, we call it behavior aspects of marketing, but that's what you also call in a more popular way behavioral economics. So how people make decisions and how these decisions can be applied in the marketing world, or more strategically, how behavioral insights impact marketing decisions, impact business decisions. So that was the area of my research.
There's another podcast I love, which calls Freakonomics. It's exactly
Freakonomics is amazing. Absolutely.
Yeah. But how often you see this mixture of, as you did, of a PhD life and a real world life? So you actually did a real time bridging between academic and non-academic careers.
Yeah, that's true. I want to say that I don't have the stats, so I don't know how many people out there have this combination of, you know, working in the business world and pursuing a PhD. For me, it was a natural fit because that's the way I ran my entire academic career, starting with a bachelor during my MBA and the research thesis and then the PhD. This was something that for me was, I don't know if it was a natural choice, but that's how I'm used to work. I'm very curious and I love bringing things from and combining things from different backgrounds or from different areas of knowledge, because I see the synergy and the magic that happens when you apply one theory into a different field. And it creates a much richer experience everywhere, whether it's in the workplace or in academia or in the classroom. So I felt that this is something that was natural for me to do. How many other people are doing that? I don't think I have the answer. I would say that probably we were more encouraged to pursue a proper academic career, to focus more on research, just because, again, you know, there are 24 hours a day. And if you need to split those 24 hours between more activities, it just leaves less time to work on research. That's what I would say. On the contrary, your research is richer, in my opinion, if you are getting some real world insights into it.
Totally agree.
Yeah, and I think your research is very applicative, right? Like the connection is very straightforward between what you were doing in the academia and how that can benefit companies, startups.
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think I really realized that back in the time, because when I was working on the research, I figured out, and this is something that I use today in my work. And it's funny how things that I studied 10 years ago suddenly become even more relevant. Eventually it's all about people. I work with startups, I work with companies, with advisors, with investors. Bottom line, we're all people and we're all making decisions. And I think that understanding the decision-making process is a key to unlocking much of the potential for, again, startups, investors, students, anyone of us in any choice we make.
I'm so happy you brought up this point, that decision-making process is a key for everything, basically. I'm interested in the time point. So you finished your PhD and you said that in your area of academic research, it is less customary to do a postdoc, as opposed to me and Lena, who comes from life sciences, where postdoc, if you did a PhD and you just thinking about academic career, postdoc is a must, at least one. And it has to be in the States, in the US, or leading European institutions. I wonder how you try to get into your mind about seven years ago.
Yeah.
And how you decided, being so applicative, how you decided, okay, I'm going to do a postdoc. Those are my goals. And this is how this postdoc gonna get me there, like career-wise, aside from living in New York, which I can understand.
Yeah, Ofer, I think you're asking a question that implies that I had this plan, everything planned out. I'll be honest, and I'd say that I had anything planned out except that we will land in New York. I knew approximately in which town in New Jersey we're gonna live. And that was about it. I didn't have a master plan. I'm gonna work on the research and then I'm gonna start it, this thing. Much of my decisions were guided by passion, because I just kept running into things that I was interested in and love to learn more about. And agility. I was able to kind of quickly change my plan according to the developments and according to the opportunities I came across. So I didn't have a master plan. My master plan was spend 2 years in the US and then go back to Israel and probably get a position in one of the colleges or universities. And I'll be honest, I wasn't excited about that, and that was my sign. So I didn't have a specific master plan, but I knew that I want to do something that I'm going, that it's important to be, for me, it's important for me to be excited about what I do and the people I work with and the kind of impact I'm doing. And so even imagining myself working solely on academic research didn't create this kind of excitement. So I knew I want more just because my entire career developed. I always had multiple pieces in the puzzle that created kind of my career portfolio. So I knew I'm gonna do some research and I'm gonna do some business and some consulting and some teaching and some other portions that will then create this picture that I really love to see in my life.
So you arrived in New York. What happened then?
So again, as I said, there was no master plan. So I arrived to NYU and I had this amazing advisor who was at the time one of the editors of one of the top journals. So she was very busy and we started to work on the research about, and most of my research is focused on decision-making in more pro-social aspects. So I was studying how empowering donation recipients increases donation. Basically, what we wanted to demonstrate then when we encourage people to give donations to charities, if we demonstrate how this donation empowers the recipient, the donation amount will be higher. So I started to work on this research, but I didn't join any lab because, again, this is less common in my field. So it was kind of an independent research project. Then I faced the reality. And the reality was that I didn't have a plan, like I said in the beginning. So I joined the doctoral seminar. And it was amazing because I was surrounded by these brilliant young PhD students who have everything planned out, and they were working on their research papers from day one. And I was supposed to focus on my research and run the experiments and analyze the data, and that's what I did. But I realized that I'm missing all the other pieces. I missed teaching, I missed the business world, and it was challenging. And that's the truth. It was a challenging period with a couple of very important pivoting points on my end that eventually opened interesting opportunities for the future. So one of those opportunities was during a talk I gave in a doctoral psychology seminar when one of the students was interested in my research and asked me if he can play with the data we collected, and that was a research about organ donations. So we were trying to understand the reluctancy of people to register for organ donation processes or cards. And this PhD student, he was building predictive models, and he said, well, if I can look at the data, maybe I can figure out a model. And that's exactly what the stage where we were stuck. And he took the data and he ran a couple of analyses and he built a model. and we published a paper based on the model he built. So that was the first opportunity. The second one is another talk, which was a talk that I gave to the faculty at Yeshiva University that then led to my first teaching position at YU, and this is essentially how I joined YU. I first came there to give just a talk in a brown bag lunch seminar.
It's a great take-home message. Give seminars, there's going to be some opportunities coming from it.
Absolutely. I think that one of the top lessons, again, and these are personal lessons, so I don't want to say they will apply to everyone, but try to say as much yes as possible, as many yeses as possible, because you never know, who will be the people sitting in the room. What are their interests? And again, I didn't came to any of these seminars with an intention to get a research partner or to get a teaching job. I came there, I showed up, and I shared my research. And it happened to be that in one of the seminars, there was a student who got interested and ran a great analysis. And in the other, they were just looking for someone to fill in a position that I fitted to. So yes, definitely say yes, because you never know. Who are the people in the room and what opportunities and doors it will open for you in the future.
Yes, indeed. So always be open to new options and to new ventures. It doesn't mean, and I can tell by myself, it doesn't mean that you're unhappy at your current position. It just means that you're curious, and this is a given, being a researcher, being a scientist, and it's nice. It's nice to learn new aspects of your research, meet new people. So you keep mentioning that even during your postdoc research, you knew something was missing. So you missed teaching, and you missed things outside of what you did in the research seminar. Could you, in a less like general terms, could you give them those like a couple of names? I missed that, or how did you figure out what was missing and where to look it up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you just said the key word. It's about curiosity, and we as researchers were naturally curious. Some of us are more focused on one research aspect, and that's what we pursue. I figured out pretty early on that I'm curious about multiple things and how they apply to each other. So I have to admit, I love teaching. I enjoy teaching my students. Now we transferred to Zoom, and even though that's a different experience, I still looking forward very much to the beginning of the semester next week at YU, because I teach the students and they teach me. And I learn from them, I would say, at least as much as I teach them. And so when I came to work on my postdoc, to work on the research, this teaching experience was something that I was missing. Again, if I'm going a couple of years back, I was teaching during my entire PhD. So this was almost part of my lifestyle. And suddenly that part was gone. And I think there is a lot of cross-pollination between teaching and research, and between doing work outside of academia and research and teaching. And the cross-pollination between these different aspects, I think if I need to use a key term, this would be the cross-pollination between the different pieces of this puzzle that I was missing just by focusing on one aspect. I don't know if it answers the question.
No, it is. So it's the constant lookup that allows you to understand if you're perfectly happy where you are, if you need to grow into multiple directions and how to do it. And yeah, so let's jump forward. So you got your teaching position at YU.
Yeah.
And so what is YU?
Wow, that's a great question. And I'll be honest, that's a question I was asked a lot and answering a lot during my visits to Israel in the last couple of years, since the moment we started the YU Innovation Lab, I started to meet with key players in the Israeli tech ecosystem. My first 2 minutes of each meeting was say, well, I'm Maria, I'm from Yeshiva University. We're not a yeshiva, we are a university. So Yeshiva University is the largest Jewish university in the United States. It's located in Manhattan, New York. We have several campuses. We have a business school, we have a law school, we have a school of science and health, we have schools of liberal arts. And one of the key factors, at least for me, was that YU has the Israeli flag on campus 365 days a year, and the tikva is played on every single official event, which was very a very pleasant surprise, again, personally for me. So that's very briefly about YU. And YU have very strong institutional connections with Israel. About 3,000 YU alumni live in Israel, and we have great connections with them. We have a campus in Jerusalem. So it's, you know, almost home away from home in a way.
I was completely unaware of it, which is amazing. I'm just opened the Chrome tab on YouTube. That's amazing. So
I'll be honest, I was completely unaware of YU as well until I came to NYU and started to look for more opportunities and say, okay, so what else can I do here? And that's how I came across Yeshiva University and a professor who taught there. And that's how my journey at YU started. Today, I'm a true fan.
So how did the teaching position turned into an innovation lab?
Well, it took a while, but my first teaching position at YU was, it was not exactly a teaching position. It was a position where it was a development and teaching position because I developed a course called Business in the Israeli Environment for YU, for the business school.
For Americans? So that,
for American students, yeah, YU students, they are mostly American. We do have international students, but the majority is American. And that was the course I developed. And that's, I want to say funny, not a funny, but a story, because I was developing that course during the summer of 2014. So we arrived to the US in 2013. And for the summer, we planned to go to spend the summer in Israel. And then in the summer of 2014, Operation Protective Edge happened. And so we spent the summer in Israel. I'm from Beersheba. So that's where we spent the summer with the sirens. And I was developing the content for the course that I was about to start teaching in September. And since it was the first semester that we were offering the course, I was very nervous that I will not have people sign up for it. And I'm a new professor and I never taught in the US before. All my teaching experience came from Israeli universities. And I had about, I think it was about 10 or 12 students signed up. And I remember I was terrified that they're gonna cancel the course because the class was too small. We ended up having a couple of students join. They never canceled the course. And today I have waiting lists of students to join it. So it since then became something that I teach on at least once a year for this course.
Yeah, there is another story about a very unpopular course in behavioral science in Harvard, I think also by an Israeli, who had like two students in the first run, and now he has years of waiting list in Harvard's business school. I don't remember his name.
Because sometimes you only know how things start, you don't know how they roll. So we don't always have a plan.
So apparently this how to do business in the Israeli ecosystem course rolled for an innovation lab.
Yes, so that's a nice rollout because again, when I was developing the course almost 6 years ago, there was no innovation lab and there was no notion of the innovation lab and it was not even on a plan. So after developing and teaching this course, what I kept on doing at Yeshiva University, I kept on teaching. I was a marketing professor back in Israel, and I teach marketing strategy and marketing research. And I was offered to teach these courses at Yeshiva University as well, and that's what I kept on doing until a year or so later, I was offered to join as a program director for a master's in marketing program that the business school was developing at the time. And, you know, I looked at the opportunity and I said, well, it will enable me to combine my passion to marketing, obtain and, you know, practice some managerial and administrative skills, and I will still be teaching. And it sounds like an exciting opportunity, and I said yes. And so for a couple of years, I developed and ran the MS in marketing, and then we revamped the program and it transitioned to another school at Yeshiva University. So today it's a digital marketing and media program. It's a master's program. It runs by the Katz School of Science and Health at YU, and I was running it for the last probably almost 3 years. I just recently stepped down to step in fully into the position of the director of the innovation lab. So this was another step I took at YU. And so we're still a couple of years before the innovation lab, but what started to happen approximately at the same time around 2016, 17, 18, is that the number of Israeli startups in New York City started to grow exponentially. And just exciting things seemed to start happen everywhere. So we started to hear more about, you know, Israeli founders coming to the city and Israeli investors.
This is together with the Technion campus at the...
But the Technion campus, I think they opened somewhere in the same... Yeah. In the same proximity of time. So just things started to happen all around. And I started speaking with entrepreneurs. One thing I didn't mention is that in addition to what I was doing at the university, so as I got, as I learned more about the American Jewish community and the American Russian Jewish community, I realized that while they have very strong cultural and religious connection to Israel, Israel is not always perceived as this, you know, business hub or even not as a startup nation. And one of the things that I did is I developed a platform that was called Made in Israel. And the idea behind the platform was to introduce Israeli products the Jewish American community so that they can support the Israeli economy by buying Made in Israel products that were available here in the US. It was a completely nonprofit. I received a grant from, the Cogeco Blueprint Fellowship. And so this was a project that I ran. And during the development of this project, I've learned more about this borderless ecosystem between Israel and the US. I've learned who are the main players, and I figured out that there are some gaps between the expectations of Israeli startups and founders when they plan their arrival to the US and how they're gonna penetrate the market and how they're gonna raise the money and the reality, which was very much different than what they expected. And that's where I started to think that, well, maybe I can add something to that conversation because I studied decision making and I started to understand the American market much more. And I have very strong ties to the Israeli market and a very deep understanding of the Israeli business environment. And so I started to realize that there is something there that I might be able to do. Then at the same time, you had like I mentioned, the number of Israeli startups in New York just started to grow, and you had more and more founders coming in, and more investment deals were signed, and it looked like something is happening. And then almost the Innovation Lab happened. As I mentioned, Yeshiva University is the largest Jewish university in the state, and we have very strong connections with Israel. And at some point, I had the chance to be in a meeting where the administration put this idea of creating a space on campus where we can host Israeli startups and let those startups to work with our students. And I remember myself listening to that, and I was like, do we have this thing? Like, do we have an innovation hub in the university? Like, is there a chance that we have that and I don't know about it? And then they said, no, we don't have it yet, but this might be a plan. And this is something we're considering of creating. And I was right on it. I said, listen, guys, this is who I am. This is what I do. I am an entrepreneur. I develop courses, programs, platforms. I'm closely familiar with the Israeli tech and business environment. I'm developing expertise in the American one. And let me help you to build this and create this and develop this. And I was very fortunate to step in into this position of really developing the Innovation Lab bottom up with a lot of support and trust and freedom from the senior administration at YU. And it started with really, we have a very nice space on campus for the Innovation Lab. So we do actually have a space that today seems less relevant, but once COVID-19 will end, hopefully it will be much more news. But when we started to develop the Innovation Lab, you know, the first summer, I think it was the summer of 2018, I literally spent with an architect choosing the colors for the walls and the rugs and the furniture.
Cool.
And speaking with the contractors and things like that. And, you know, space is great, but then as someone whose decisions or at least approach is rooted in data, I said, well, okay, we're going to have a space. What are we going to do with the space? And before starting, and we all had ideas. Like I had ideas, the deans have ideas, the administration had ideas. I said, before we develop something, before we build something based on our opinions, let's collect some data and let's talk to people. And one of the things I did early on is I started speaking to Israeli founders, to accelerators and incubators in Israel, to accelerators, incubators in New York, trying to understand what are the actual needs of these founders when they arrive into this ecosystem. What is the need of the university? Because we had our own goals in mind and I wanted to see where these two can be combined. And what are the best models or what are the possible models that are out there and they're working? And so based on this research, we developed the model of the YU Innovation Lab, and it was officially launched in May 2019. So a year.
Well, just and, over a year now.
Yeah. So we are a startup. I work a lot with founders and I'm always telling them, I am a startup as well. So you know, whatever you're going through, I'm going through as well. And this year, speaking the startup language, we validated our value proposition. So we worked with more than 25 startups, more than 200 students were involved, 12 academic courses, 6 faculty members. We developed the ecosystem and we're at a place where the model is validated and now we can grow further.
So you perceive yourself as an accelerator or like a service provider startup?
I would call it an accelerator, but not in a traditional way.
You're not funded.
We don't provide funding. What we do provide and the program that we developed is we have several layers of support. And the core of the Innovation Lab, it essentially will look at the lab as an academia-based platform. So what do I have in academia? I have students and I have faculty. And what we do with the startups that join the lab, that apply and go through the entire process and are a good fit for the lab, is we provide them access to our main resources, which are again, students and faculty. And what we do, we pair startups with teams of students and faculty, and for the length of the semester, and sometimes we have startups that keep on working with us over a course of several semesters, we have teams of students and faculty working with the startup on a set of specific questions or goals. And usually our focus on more on the business side. So we help them, again, we mostly work with Israeli startups, though we also have a couple of American startups. And this semester we even have a startup from Argentina. But the goal of most of the startups who join the Innovation Lab is to penetrate to the American market. Now, as part of the research that I was running to try and really understand what are the needs of the Israeli founders when they come to the US, the first one was to understand the market. Well, the first one was money, right? Whenever I speak with a founder, I would not say that it's not the knowledge. I'm pushing for the knowledge, but the first need is money.
So, not just an Israeli founder, it's any founder.
And I would argue these days, the more I know, the more I would argue that money is the most important thing, but I'll keep it as a separate conversation. But to get money, you need to have your value proposition, and you need to have your problem validated, and you need to have all these things to really get access to invest, to have a good potential to raise this money. And so one of the things we're doing in the lab is we are running go-to-market analysis, and we're running competitive analysis and customer discovery and pilot testing when needed and user interviews. And these kind of projects that help startup to validate their problem in the US and gather some firsthand primary data about their products or services.
So all of those projects are ran for a startup in the Innovation Lab by YU students?
Students and faculty, yeah.
I'm just wondering about the students. Is it undergrad? Is it graduate students? Is it marketing?
So it's a mix of undergrad and grad students. Both from the business school, so they're coming from majors in marketing and entrepreneurship, and we have also master's students from the School of Science and Health, and there it's also usually will be marketing students or data analytics students. We have a program in biotech and management, so we had a couple of capstones run with biotech master's students, so it's a variety. Essentially, the goal is to get access to as many students as possible based on the needs of the startups. So we're like a matchmaking platform in a way where we're matching the students and their academic needs with the needs of the startup. So if I have a biotech startup, I have a course and students and faculty who can run this project, and if I have a startup that needs to develop their social media strategy, I have a social media course and a professor who will work with them on developing this strategy. And if I have a startup that needs marketing research, I have a marketing research course and a professor who will run marketing research.
So I wonder roughly how many cohorts of students went through the Innovation Lab till now?
So we were planning to run two cohorts a year, but since COVID hit, we had increasing demand both from the startup and the student end, so we ran a third cohort in the summer.
Oh, okay, so increasing, that's good.
Increasing, yeah, and I think the funny part is that when I was developing the Innovation Lab, the idea, I used the word borderless ecosystem. And a year ago, borderless ecosystem wasn't clear, and people were asking me, but what do you mean by borderless ecosystem? And I would say, well, no, the students and the faculty and the advisors are in the US and the startups are still in Israel, but we use Zoom and, you know, we live in a borderless world. And then COVID hit, and for us, it didn't change the way the lab works, because from day one, we were working remotely and the students and faculty and advisors would be here in the US, and the startups for the most would still be in Israel. So we're running about, our average cohort is 10 startups per semester, and we have about 80 students working. Wow. Sometimes more each semester with a startup.
Sounds like a fantastic opportunity for the students.
Yeah, definitely.
I would say for the students and for the startups, because this, for what we're doing this semester, is that we're taking even more more holistic approach. And for the 10 startups that are joining the lab, each one of them will be working with at least two different courses, meaning it will be focused. We will have at least two of their major challenges focused. So let's say we will have startups and we will have people who will be working on marketing research for a startup and on their communication audit. So we'll be auditing their website and collateral and editing. So we're taking a much more holistic approach, and that's a great value for the startup and for the students. I see it as a win-win. And this is just the first level, the initial level that they're getting. And on top of that, if you want, I can talk about the other things that we provide to them. But for me, this is the core, because it enables both parties, in addition to the work that they're doing. For the students, it's obvious they're working with an Israeli founder. They're getting their hands dirty. You know, they're not working on another case study, which are, you know, case studies are great, but they're getting to do some meaningful work. And you see that students, when working directly with founders, how engaged they are and what kind of outcomes they actually produce. For the founders, in addition to the outcomes and to the research and to the insights, they're getting the experience of working with American students and American faculty and American advisors. And for many of them, this is very valuable experience. Because, you know, unless you had a previous experience in working in a multinational company, not always you had the experience of emailing and talking and communicating, not only in English, but in an American manner.
Corporate. No, it's not corporate yet, but business.
Not even corporate, but like speaking American, which is another big thing that we are developing now in the lab, like a series of either webinars or a workshop. We haven't decided it yet, but it's going to be an American Hebrew and American Israeli dictionary, because it's not enough. You know, in Israel, we speak English, but we don't speak American, and it takes a while to learn to speak American. Now, if you're just living your life here, we all have these funny stories about how we didn't say things correctly or really didn't understand the context. Yeah. When it comes to business, sometimes it's a deal breaker. And so, we need to learn the rules of the game, and then we need to play by them. And working directly with American students and faculty and advisors is a great opportunity to do that.
Yeah. I think the next stage of this dictionary would be VC, American, Hebrew, VC. So, because those are two extremes of this language, how to talk to venture capitalist.
Oh, it's so funny you're mentioning that. Yeah, that's...
So how many of the students that went with the early startups actually found themselves in either continue with those startups or finding the ways in the, you can say, industry as a general term, and how they, if you have like, you heard their testimonials about how productive that experience was for them?
Since we only started to run the lab officially last year, we have very few students who actually graduated, but based on our experience and based on student feedback they found it extremely helpful. This is something that they show off. This is something they talk about during their job interviews. Some of them are actually began to consider careers in entrepreneurships, which was something that wasn't on their mind before the Innovation Lab. And this was also one of the goals for the Innovation Lab. And you know, that's one of the goals at YU. We want to develop the entrepreneurial mindset. And one of the best way to develop is to introduce them to the people who are already doing that and let them to work with these people. I think on that end, we're on a good trajectory and this goal is accomplished, and I hopefully will be, you know, we'll continue that way and even better.
As you said, you needed to collect the data to understand how to do this better. Where like which models, where have you seen this kind of model work?
I'll put it this way. Based on to the best of my knowledge, this is a pretty unique model, and I'll tell you why. Most of the incubators that are created in universities, and there are plenty of those, there is one in NYU, there are a couple in NYU, and there is one in Columbia, they would usually focus on student entrepreneurship, meaning they have a venture creation programs for their own students. Same, we're speaking about New York, very similar things are happening in Israel. So you encourage student entrepreneurship, you're building a program, and this is something that is on our mind as well, but that's the traditional model for entrepreneurship hubs inside the university, either student entrepreneurship or faculty entrepreneurship. And then you have TTOs and tech transfer offices that take the research from the lab, as you guys probably know better than me, and patent it, and then license it or sell it to companies in the industry. The model where you're taking startups from one country and kind of helping them to learn the market into another country, into a different country, is pretty innovative on its own. So I wouldn't say that, you know, there is nowhere, no other place where it runs in a similar way, but I didn't come across anything that is similar. So we developed this model uniquely for YU because of our unique position, because we were interested in working with Israeli startups, and we are positioned in a way that enabled us to help to have these connections, and our students were interested in working with Israeli startups. And on the other hand, Israeli startups are very much interested in studying the American market and raising here money and finding partners and clients. So it just was a really good match and win-win for all parties involved.
Yeah, I think it's a great model, and that can be definitely transferred to more of a sort of biology, engineering, sort of more sort of developed sciences. That'd be really interesting to see that happening as well.
That would be interesting. So you think of transitioning Israeli startups or foreign startups into an American institution and continue the research here in a specific domain or in more business domain?
Yeah, no, in the research domain. I think it's, well, first of all, you know, sometimes tools are different, sometimes sort of available collaborations are different than the US in general, but also just as an opportunity, not necessarily connecting Israel and the US, but just having startups to come in with a question, with a sort of scientific question, and having a project with students and trying to figure out a specific question that they might have, that the startup is, you know, always sort of fresh opinions, fresh perspectives can be interesting. And obviously, not experience that we sort of naturally get during a PhD or a postdoc. And I think that could be a very interesting opportunity for students to explore.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Wow, Maria, that sounds, first of all, a unique journey with lots of stops, and the Innovation Lab sounds amazing. I wonder if you could, when we're done, you know, we will leave our listeners a link where the startups can apply, where students can apply for the program. So currently it's open just for Yeshiva University startups, right? Students.
Yeah. Currently it's open for YU students. Absolutely. I'm going to share the link to our webpage and to our Medium channel. And startups more than welcome to reach out to me directly or apply via the website.
Yeah, I'm doing a postdoc, but listeners know I'm also a co-founder of an Israeli company for the exact amount of time that I'm doing a postdoc. And I think this bridging, this penetrating, as an Israeli startup, penetrating the US market, understanding the needs, especially in healthcare, which we come from a very different system. Yeah. And just understanding what is reimbursement, that is worth any amount of time you can put into it. And if you have a US bound partner like the Innovation Lab, that could be the difference between a success and a complete failure of a startup. So thank you for that. And this is like a great initiative and great idea, and sounds that you're also doing great.
Thank you.
You had a very vast course and you did so much. I guess you have so many insights. Could you give us a bit, like a couple of do's and don'ts for, you know, life, career, universe, and everything? No, just life and career. That would be good.
Yeah, sure. So I would say that my first advice or my first do is always try to understand the organization or the people you're speaking to, or their motivations and, you know, their jobs to be done. Because we all tend to focus on what's important to us, our goals, our interests. But to be able to develop meaningful collaborations and projects, you really need to look deeper into the people you work with and the organizations you serve to understand what are their interests, where is the organization going, what are they trying to achieve, and who do they need to impress. And I think this is coming from my academic background and decision making. The more you know, and it's not even about knowing, it's the more you understand the other person or the other organization, the better you can tailor your solution and the better you can serve them, which will eventually be beneficial to both of you. So do your homework, study the organization, learn about the person. It will increase the chances for you to have meaningful and successful collaboration. So I would say that that's the first one. Definitely understand the motivation of the organization or the person you're working with. The second, and I think I mentioned that one, is try to say as much yes as possible. You never know who you meet. You never know who's in the room. You never know which opportunities will open when you will attend that event, you know, speak at that panel, run this seminar, again, in pre-COVID world, but even now, you know, during COVID-19. The number of colleagues and collaborators and friends you can meet is endless. And so just say yes to things that excite you. And another one would probably be proactive and look for opportunities. There are so many opportunities out there, and today it's even easier. You have everything online. You can join relevant communities. You can connect with people. Zoom made everything easier. We can attend events we couldn't attend before. We can collaborate from people worldwide, and it doesn't seem weird because we're all on Zoom and we're all on screen. So I think it's a great time to develop these connections and seek and look for these opportunities. And so I think what you guys are doing here is creating an opportunity for people on both ends, your speakers and your listeners, to learn more and engage. And so, you know, thank you for doing that. And for all the listeners, seek the opportunities you're interested in. I think that would be my 2 cents.
Those are much more than 2 cents. I think it's those are amazing insights. And as far as connection, yeah, so thank you for your kind words. And we are very happy to see that people are in this small community that we have created around this interviews and in the Facebook group of Macademia. People are asking questions and using this as a platform to connect and understand and really grow as people, as professionals, and yeah. So I completely
invite everyone to join. Of course.
It's free. It's free to join. We try to be very quick about turnaround and accepting people. And so Maria, you're also part of this group, right? And so people can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've been
quite
active.
I wanted to say that I wish I would have something like that group when I was completing my PhD, thinking what's next, what can I do with a PhD, which is not being a college professor. So thank you guys for the amazing work that you're doing. I think just exposing people to other options is so important.
Yeah, figures, you appreciate data. Again, thank you so much for your time. It was great. I can definitely learn, every interview thus far, I learned a new thing about the greatest, the largest Jewish university in the States, Yeshiva, and I'm going to go a bit deeper now in my free time.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you for having me here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Maria.